You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. I'm your guest host today, Christina Long, filling in for Matt Jones. Your regular host will be back on Monday. It is a dark and stormy day in Fayetteville, and we expect that's going to impact this weekend's baseball series against Missouri. Waiting on official word here as we record during the 10 o'clock hour, but we'll have updates throughout the day on and throughout the weekend on schedule changes if they happen on wholehogsports.com, so you can keep up with everything there as we share updates when we get them. On the show today, Ethan Westerman is going to join me in the studio, and we're going to talk a little bit about what we heard from Sam Pittman yesterday at football. Ethan went over to practice and observed again their eighth spring practice, so we'll talk a little bit about takeaways from that, as well as some other Arkansas sports news from around campus. We've got a little bit more women's basketball, a little bit of gymnastics after the first round of NCAAs last night. But first, we're joined by Matt Michaels, the color analyst for Mizzou Baseball, who's here in Fayetteville. He's over at Baum Walker now, getting ready for calling the game, whatever games they're able to play this weekend. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. And you and I talked a little bit before we started about what it's looking like over at Baum Walker. But what do you see out there in terms of the water?
Yeah, I have the press box view. And thanks, Christina, for having me. It is a little bit of ponding on the apron in front of the third base dugout, a little bit in left field. I mean, a field like this, a great surface with a great grounds crew, it could clear up, I'm sure, if the rain stops. But we all know the rain's been persistent here at about 10:30 as we record this on Friday morning. So we'll see. I know what the forecast says for later. I haven't heard anything one way or the other about where game for Friday night stands, and certainly for the rest of the weekend. So I think it's still touch and go right now.
So Mizzou baseball, not necessarily new to weather issues, because wasn't there a series at Texas affected last week too? I remember seeing a lot of photos from that series, some weather problems.
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, the series against Texas, they played on Friday, no problem. But before Friday's game, they announced a doubleheader on Saturday, which was, I don't really know what came of it. There were concerns for weather on Sunday. It turns out that Sunday later in the day was actually fine in Columbia, so maybe they could have played all 3 days. But in any event, yeah, that was, I think, really the first main weather-induced issue the Tigers have had, where they had to move things around, certainly in the league. And they played a couple of doubleheaders before. They played two nines against Texas. Didn't go well, especially in the second game against the reigning SEC pitcher of the week, Ruger Riojas. But they've had some stuff move around. They've had to be flexible.
Yeah. And this is a Missouri team that's looking for its first SEC win still. They're 0-9 in SEC play. And, you know, looking at the statistics from a lot of their games, it seems like pitching's been an issue. I know they've had injury concern there throughout the season, including their usual Friday starter. It's Ian, is it Losey? How do you?
Losey.
Okay. So Ian Losey, their usual Friday guy, is injured. So they've had to make a change to the rotation a little bit. Can you kind of walk us through what's happened with the injuries they've dealt with on this pitching staff?
Well, it has been really numerous, unfortunately, and it seems like it's been that way for the past several seasons for Missouri. They knew before the season that they wouldn't have the services of Javon Pimentel, who might have been their Friday night starter had he been healthy, but he went down with injury before the season, and the Tigers knew they wouldn't have him. Losey is coming back from seasons that have been plagued by injury in the past, and it seems like everything that Ian has dealt with for him to keep going, it was great to see him as the Friday night starter this season, but he went out from his last start. It just didn't seem like he was finishing pitches and looked very comfortable. They had another weekend starter from the first weekend of the season, Daniel Whistler, actually start on Wednesday in his road to recovery from an upper body injury. He worked to two batters, got two outs, and then something didn't feel right, and he went down again. They're missing, I believe, Josh McDevitt, and they've been missing him for the balance of the season. They've gotten one or two back over the course of the year, but they've been really fighting it. And they knew before the season that Tony Dubek, who's coming back from a second year's worth of going in to try to fix his UCL, is on the slow road to recovery. They just saw him pitch on the game on Wednesday against Arkansas Pine Bluff, and he worked an inning. And then Sam Horn, of course, couldn't really get involved with the team until spring football practice was done, as he's trying to be the number one quarterback for Eli Drinkwitz on the football field. He is throwing on the side now, but he's still a little ways away. And it just seems like, you know, whenever you turn around, there's another pitcher injury on this team, and that's been a problem for them really the last few seasons. And unfortunately, you've had to throw some younger guys in the fire, or maybe some players without as much experience, and that's where the struggle has come. You know, it's a team right now that has an ERA overall that is just astronomical. I mean, they had a 5.80 last season, and that was actually pretty good compared to some of their peers, but it's a 7.95 now, and they just have struggled at times to throw enough strikes and enough counts, and they've gotten themselves in their own trouble, and opponents have been able to take advantage of it. If they cut that down, I think they'd be pretty solid. I think the stuff is there, but they're a little bit more thin due to the injury, and they've had some strike throwing and consistency problems, and that's why you see the elevated runs support for other teams and why they haven't been able to keep them off the board.
Right, and then the availability report comes out, and Jackson Lovitz, their top offensive guy, is on there as questionable. Do we have any idea of what's going on there with him? I know we'll get another report before the game.
Well, we'll see, because what happened with Lovitz is late in the game on Wednesday against Arkansas Pine Bluff, it was a tight ball game, and the Tigers were chasing the game and finally came back to win on a walk-off in the ninth inning, but Lovitz slid into second base, and on the throw, the shortstop came down and cleated him in one of his legs, and you could see the pants rip that was there, and they wanted to play it safe with Lovitz, took him out. He had a wrap. I don't think it's very major, but I'm sure the Tigers wanted to be very cautious with one of their best offensive threats and their starting shortstop right now. So we'll see. I mean, Lovitz is on the trip, but I don't think it would be very major, but we haven't heard anything official. We'll just all have to find out together.
Right, yeah. Arkansas fans will recognize his name because he's the brother of Ross Lovitz, a former Razorback. And he's, like I said, been their top offensive guy. Some stats on him. He's hitting .368. He's got 7 home runs and 33 RBI, all of which I believe lead the team so far. So what has he kind of done well? And is this, was he expected to be this kind of offensive leader for them this season?
I think coming into the season, you would have expected him to be an offensive leader. He had 10 home runs as a sophomore last year. He was one of the top players, in fact, in terms of overall hitting, the top returning player by average on this ball club. He has the levers for power. He's able to hit to all fields. He can play solid defense, and he's played all over. The team started the season thinking that Jackson Lovitz would be their starting third baseman. It didn't work out the best there. He's actually better served as the shortstop right now on this team, so that's where he's been getting the bulk of the time. He's also played first base and center field in his time in Columbia. But he's a guy that I think you can't afford to have his bat out of the lineup, especially when he's being selective, and he's done a much better job of that. In fact, just on Tuesday, he had a career game. He had 2 doubles, a grand slam home run, and he drove in 8. So his career night offensively as a collegian was on Tuesday night, and he's the type of guy that you can see as a true power threat in this lineup. I think him, Mateo Serna, maybe the most two consistent offensive threats that Missouri has had throughout the entire balance of the season, and Lovitz especially recently has come on strong.
Missouri has kind of a unique situation on their staff with longtime coach Tim Jamison back as an assistant. You know, he's had such great talent on his teams and on his staffs. Arkansas pitching coach Matt Hobbs played for him and coached under him. Tony Vitello, same kind of deal. Dave Van Horn knows him from Team USA, he said yesterday. Just that's kind of unique, bringing a Mizzou lifer back as an assistant in a decision Kerrick Jackson made. Just what does that do for the program, having a guy like that was part of the program for so long, and what kind of is his role with this staff?
It is very unique. You know, when the announcement was made and when Coach Jamison was back in Columbia, I talked to him just, you know, briefly about it, and he said, I'm glad to be back as a pitching coach. You know, he really got into it to coach pitchers, and you think of all the great ones that he brought through Columbia, names like Scherzer and Gibson and Crow, and he really does have a way with pitching mentality, and certainly he calls the games for this team through the pitch comm. He knows how to handle a staff. He is certainly able to be relied upon by Kerrick Jackson for, you know, a really great sounding board as someone who did this for a long time and successfully in Columbia, but it's Kerrick Jackson's show to run. I think they work very well together. Of course, Coach Jay coached at Southern Illinois for a former Mizzou assistant in Lance Rhodes for a minute before Kerrick Jackson got the job at Memphis and said, hey, Tim, would you be my pitching coach? And he said yes, and it was a natural fit for the two of them to move over to Columbia. I think he has a really good temper around this staff, you know, a good demeanor in terms of how he works with people. I think that I think the players really do take to him. It's kind of an older school approach, but everybody can take it with their own technique, and it's just been, I think, unfortunate to see that the results on the field haven't been what anybody would want this season. But, I mean, you look at what last year the Tigers did in a similar spot with pitching injury, and they performed pretty well. When they're strike throwers, the stuff is really good. I think that, you know, you can't coach anyone to not to throw strikes when they're not able to or haven't been. You know, at some point you got to go out there and do it. But I think he's been a good addition to the staff. He worked even for some years at Missouri in the athletic department, even after not being the head coach. So his dad was a Missouri football coach long, long ago. He's a Columbia lifer. And I think it was a unique opportunity, one you wouldn't see everywhere. But with Tim Jamison, I think it's a good fit.
And you mentioned last season, and, you know, last year was Kerrick Jackson's first at Missouri, and it was a tough job for him to take, right? I mean, Missouri has had a hard time since moving up to the SEC, and, you know, the record hasn't been good this season, and they've struggled. But is there anything you've noticed that's different or better or just a change from year one to year two under Jackson?
Well, I think before the season, Coach Jackson was definitely telling people that, you know, this team was able to have more ownership of itself. I think he really liked the way that they melded together. I think this team really gets along and they keep fighting. You know, it's not like you have some sort of issue in the clubhouse. I do feel like, you know, going into year two, the expectation and the standard that returners could have of adjusting to how he handles business and the expectations he has for his team is something that he wants to rely on a little bit more. And, you know, the club, it hasn't always responded in wins and losses, but part of that has sometimes been, you know, you just don't sequence things the right way. If there's a game where you don't pitch so well, the offense hasn't come around enough to save it. Or if the offense goes away, that's the good pitching day. So I feel like in terms of the way that he wants to run things, things are pretty consistent. He wants the mentality of this program to be, I think, a little bit more confident and a little bit more understanding that if they handle their business and if they play clean baseball, which he says all the time, then they'll be in position to win games. And if they play clean, he's going to be fine with where the results are. There haven't really been too many occasions in which I think he and the staff has felt that they've played clean enough. We're going to see down the stretch of this season if they can find that. But in terms of where things are, in terms of program standards, he's not going to make excuses for location or situation or anything like that. In the end, you've got 60 feet, 6 inches, 90 feet between the base paths. They give you baseball and bats. Go out there and play your best. And that's the standard I think he holds this program to. And that's been pretty consistent from year one to year two, to be honest.
We talked about all the pitching injuries, and, you know, they've announced a rotation, I think the first two guys, and then Arkansas is going to go with their same rotation, maybe changing the order depending on when they're able to get games in. But, you know, for the guys that are available and the guys that are not hurt, what can you tell us about what Arkansas might see from the pitchers that Missouri does have available?
Well, it does look like we'll see Caden Jacoby, and part of this has just been thrown in flux because of the way things have gone and a shorter staff, and it's kind of been, you know, whoever's available on that day. And Jacoby can be a solid strike thrower. He doesn't necessarily blow you away with his stuff. I think there are plenty of pitchers on these Tigers that are not going to necessarily light up the radar gun, but if they throw their pitches in a good mix and they locate, they can absolutely do the job. And Jacoby's a little bit more of a veteran. He's had time in this program from last year, so expected to be the Friday night guy. Brady Kellenbrink, as a freshman, scheduled as the starter in game two, and he's a great competitor. He's a freshman, so he's had some freshman moments, but he went out in really an emergency situation a couple of weekends ago against Ole Miss, as Will Libert, who's a redshirt freshman coming off of Tommy John, who the Tigers really like and has the makeup to be a very good starter in the long term for Missouri. He had an injury. I think he cut a finger on his pitching hand, and so he was thrown off turn. And so that put Kellenbrink into a Sunday against Ole Miss, and he threw very well. I think he struck out 5 or 6. He worked 3 solid innings in an emergency role. He actually learned about it that afternoon when he got to the ballpark. So you'll see him at some point, and I think the staff is excited about the potential there. But in terms of who comes in at what point on the course of the weekend, it really is anybody's guess right now. The Tigers had 2 games in the midweek to go up against Arkansas. Pine Bluff, that has stretched a somewhat thin pitching staff a little bit even more thin, and I'm sure Missouri hoped they'd have Daniel Whistler available, and now that seems in question. So I think you'll see everybody at some point or another, but you can look down in terms of the statistics and seeing that there's some games where things have gone really well and other games where it hasn't been. And I think staff-wide, it's going to be strike throwing. If the Tigers are throwing strikes, they're able to do their job. If they're not and they're putting men on base, teams in this league have found a way to make that hurt against them. And hopefully that's a trend for Missouri that they can find a way to turn around over the course of this weekend, because if they don't, good offenses so far in the league have taken advantage of that stuff.
Well, Matt, we appreciate your insight and you taking some time out of setting up for your broadcast. We'll see when they actually get to play. It kind of seems like maybe now they might be able to squeeze a game in today. It's just kind of hard to tell with the forecast changing as often as it does. But I'll see you out there this weekend, and hopefully they're able to get three in.
Yeah, I'm hoping for three in. I think we'll find a way to do that one way or the other. I appreciate you having me on, Christina. I don't see raindrops right now. So let's just everybody come over and play right now. Does
Perfect.
That sound good?
Why not? I mean, get on the bus. Let's go. Thank you so much, Matt. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Welcome back. I'm joined now in the studio by Ethan Westerman, and we're going to talk a little bit about what we learned from Sam Pittman and Arkansas football practice yesterday. First, I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, and they are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas and for skilled craftsmanship, you can choose Bentonville Glass for all of your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can visit them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan, we were over there to listen to Sam Pittman speak yesterday, and then you were able to go over and watch practice. There was a lot of general manager talk yesterday with Pittman and a lot of wide receiver talk, two of kind of the hotter button topics throughout the spring right now. So let's start with general manager, because we had talked to Coach Pittman about the general manager position before it was reported who they were going to hire and then before they made it official. And it was funny at the time because he had kind of said during those comments before we knew who they were maybe looking at, he had said, you know, maybe somebody with an NFL or NBA background. And I remember thinking, and I think I said this on the show at the time, I remember thinking, you know, okay, NBA, that's kind of odd. It would be kind of weird if they got an NBA person. Because at the time, we were thinking it would be a football GM. And it turns out it's actually an athletic department-wide GM. They bring in Remy Cofield from the Celtics. And it was funny. It proved to be, prophetic. I think he maybe had a clue what was going on when he spoke. But yesterday, he talked a little bit about what this is actually going to look like with Cofield. And I think there's been a lot of concern from fans and from those of us on the outside about the idea of having a basketball guy who is running, you know, the contract and financial system for the athletic department in terms of when it comes to player negotiations. And that he's going to be over, you know, running point on kind of all sports. And it's not totally clear if he's, you know, how they're going to build maybe a staff or a department for this, how this operation is really going to work. And we kind of tried to get as much as we could from Pittman yesterday. And he basically said he's going to be very involved in all of these meetings that they're having as they evaluate portal guys. And it sounds like he will be involved in all those meetings as they evaluate, but I also don't think they're expecting him to come in and be a football talent scout. I think it's going to be a little bit more like they look at who and what they want, and he helps them figure out who they can get. Is that kind of the same impression that you got?
Yeah, that's the vibe I got. It seems like he's more of like a, let me help you get what the price range should be based on what y'all have told me type of deal. That's the sense that I got. And I mean, I get it. There's those concerns probably aren't going to go away from people about the only basketball background until he can prove otherwise, like that it shouldn't be a concern. Certainly seemed like Sam Pittman feels a relief about having this role because it's less of, he talked about having to, like, as the head coach with these negotiations in the past with NIL deals, have to be the good guy and the bad guy. And it's like you go from being on the practice field where you're just coaching to where you're all of a sudden having to just play this role where it's good guy, bad guy. And it seems like now he's going to get to focus a lot more on the coaching, and it's going to be up to Remy Cofield and I guess whoever, whatever staff else there is, to kind of play that good guy, bad guy role with figuring out how much it's you can afford for a player. And honestly, some of these conversations, I'm like, are the players even going to really hear them? Because they're now with this role, you can kind of be proactive with your price tag of what you're kind of looking at with players. I know Sam Pittman mentioned that, like, he literally after that news conference was about to go look at five portal guys and determine like how much maybe you could like get them for. So I just think that there's a lot of stuff that's now going to happen front end, especially with like the whole NIL deal clearinghouse. There's like the third party now, maybe Deloitte or somebody.
Nobody knows what it's going to look like yet, and that's one of the things that has to get ironed out before the settlement gets approved, which could be next week. But that's one of the biggest kind of hangups: is what is this clearinghouse that's going to decide whether NIL deals are legitimately for market value, or if they're kind of a fake, like post an Instagram ad and I'll give you $200,000. You know.
Exactly. So we'll see how this shakes out. I know the revenue sharing for a school like Arkansas should help. Like, I mean, you're all of a sudden able to pay them out of your department's funds a lot of money. Yeah. So I think, I mean, no matter what, I think that this will help Arkansas from a financial standpoint. It's now just a matter of, I think, seeing how this piece of funding for athletes shakes out with the NIL deals that will still exist, but now there's trying to be more transparency with it, trying to have more like what is legitimate NIL, like we were talking about. It's just there's a whole lot of things at play, but I think by and large the revenue sharing should help Arkansas, like just from a holistic standpoint of this is new revenue that they have to share with athletes.
I think it's just such a relief for Pittman and for coaches everywhere that, you know, as they've been doing this, I think the relationship between coaches and players has eroded some because, as Pittman has said, the coach is kind of the bad guy. And so there's an idea that, well, Coach Pittman won't pay me what I'm worth, or Coach Pittman's holding money from me or whatever. And this is happening to staffs across. This is not a Sam Pittman or Arkansas problem specifically. But I think that was something that he was talking about how it makes it personal in a way that makes it hard to coach and run the program the way that they're used to running it. Mm-hmm. And having this person who is kind of more in charge of that, while still, you know, Pittman kind of, he's asserted that he has the say over who's coming and go, you know, who they get, who they want. But someone who is kind of taking the lead on those negotiations and helping them kind of figure out what's available to them will take a lot of that pressure off and help, I think, the relationship piece quite a bit.
Yeah, because it's like we think a lot of times with these player negotiation about like just bringing guys in. But I'm curious once it comes to the retention part of your roster, like how that looks, because that is a situation where like Sam Pittman will still, like if somebody doesn't feel like they're getting, you know, paid the amount they deserve, I'm sure the head coach will still take a lot of the, like,
sure, they'll hear about it, they'll come in the office and talk to them. Yeah,
but end of the day, it's like, this is what we deemed, like, this is just this is how it is. Like, I mean, and it has to be a weird friction for a coach these days, like having to try and walk that line of be a player's coach, but at the same time sometimes you just can't.
We also have to be a boss, basically.
Yeah, and so
of employees. Even though they're technically not employees still.
I found it interesting yesterday that Sam Pittman literally said he has been naive a lot of times about guys leaving. Like he said, I mean, he mentioned that there are some guys that like you can just tell based on body language, like they're checked out by the end, and like you have an idea, like okay, they're transferring. But he said like there's been quite a few that literally on the field coaching them, like he had no idea they were going to leave.
Well, I think my interpretation of what he said was more when he's coaching, he's not going through and watching drills and going through coaching with, okay, I don't need to focus on that guy because he's probably going to transfer.
Yeah.
Like he's not thinking of it as like, well, that guy's not going to be here, so I don't need to worry about him.
Yeah.
I think that was my read on what he was saying about
it. It was one of those where it was like, I was having a hard time like deciphering. I'm like, what do you mean by that? I got kind of that sense and it just doesn't cross his mind. Like he's not like sitting there like, well, this guy's gonna,
and I'm sure he's thinking about it, right? Because they have to think about it all the time. But he's not, you know, neglecting certain players because he just, you know, the way that it's different than the way we might talk about players, and we might go, all right, well, this guy's probably gonna hit the portal, or it might be in this guy's best interest to hit the portal based on, you know, an outside view. And it sounds like he tries not to take that approach so that he is not, you know, because I imagine if you start treating guys like they're gonna transfer, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that forces them into transferring, you know.
Yeah, because he segued with this just of like how he's still gonna coach the way that he coaches, and I think that what that gets to the heart of it is just that he is very much set on like, my job is to coach you, my job is to try and win games and be a good coach. And it's like, if you, the moment that like, you, like I know some players, they'll let the money aspect maybe affect their game and affect if, I mean, we've seen it, I'm not going to drop names, but like players who literally like probably an injury they could come back from, but like they don't ever because you can tell they're probably holding out to try and leverage for.
And it happens at other schools.
It happens everywhere. Yeah, it happens everywhere. So it's like, I think that what Pittman was getting at is like, as a coach, he's not going to
opt out of coaching them because exactly. He thinks they might transfer.
Exactly. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I think that it's very much the overarching theme of all the general manager talk was it is a relief for coaches to have this role. And it's Sam Pittman used the word buffer over and over. Just like it creates a nice little buffer for him between him and the athlete in these talks. It's so that he doesn't have to be like the ultimate. I mean, he is in a way the ultimate, like we're keeping or we're getting him, whatever. But he's not like the... He's not doing all the boss stuff that he had to do.
Right. He had a really funny analogy. He was saying it's a buffer the way that, you know, a dad might go to his son and be like, hey, see what your mom thinks about this. You know, like you kind of get the go-between there. And he had another, you know, somebody asked him basically, how do you feel about a basketball guy being the general manager here? And he had a funny moment where he was like, well, I coached ninth grade girls basketball in the 80s and I'm a football guy. You know, so yeah. I thought it was a very Sam Pittman moment that was very funny.
It was.
And so, you know, I do think there is something to be said for the basketball guy of it all, but I also don't think it has to be. I don't think it has to be a problem. I don't think it's inherently a problem, or a bad thing, or a sign that they don't care about football anymore. I don't think it has to be that, and I don't think Pittman believes it has to be that. What it looks like in practice and how they kind of build a staff around Cofield and what the plan is for that, we aren't sure yet. You know, that will remain to be seen as they kind of build this thing as they go. But the other big topic yesterday was wide receivers. It's been a hot topic all spring. We've written about it, talked about it, and Pittman really said pretty explicitly yesterday that there's four guys that they feel really good about it. And it's Raylan Sharp, Cam Shanks, Ismail Cece, and Omega Blake. And those are, you know, somebody asked, who do you know who's going to be kind of the guy? And he was like, no, but it's going to probably come from these four.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty clear when you watch practice. You know, CJ Brown's been with the first team, but he's, you know, to use a Pittmanism, I haven't really like felt him in practice. He hasn't stood out much. He hasn't been bad, but he just hasn't stood out the way that some of these other guys have at times. And he kind of talked a lot about how these are the guys that they feel strongest about. Now, he also said there's not necessarily an Andrew Armstrong in this group, and that's something we've talked about before. He had said that before. But he also mentioned that with Armstrong, you kind of had to see they saw the potential, especially coming into his second season, but they had to kind of wait and see what they were going to get in a game. And I think that's kind of where they're at with some of these guys. You know, they see potential, especially in a guy like Omega Blake, who has flashed and made some cool plays and looked really good. And it seems like he has the work ethic. It seems like Pittman has alluded to that. But what it looks like in a game is going to tell you more about who the next guy is going to be.
For sure. And I mean, he mentioned yesterday that like right now they're at a weird situation where they have, and we've, I mean, talked about it all the way leading up to spring, and even in spring, is like they have a lot of small, fast receivers. Mm-hmm. And he was mentioning, he's like, we can't have like all of them on the field probably at the same time. He said they have gone literally five wide at times, just because they feel like they have guys that can play. But he's like, Sharp and Shanks, he thinks both of them are really good. And it's like, but like on a Saturday, what does that look like? That's where my head goes. And I keep on thinking, like, you're going to have somebody pulling Armstrong. Like, you're going to have somebody that I don't think they don't have to be like the leading receiver by yardage in the SEC and like do, like, I'm not saying that. Like, you
but
don't
who's
have
your
to have,
go-to guy?
Exactly. Who's your guy who somebody will lead the pack? If I'm sitting here on Friday, April 4th, 2025, I'm putting my chips on Omega Blake, but that's just me. That's what I'm saying. That's where we're at, though, where it's like you can't know until we see him like on the field actually doing stuff. We've had spring ball heroes before.
Right.
And
Tyrone Broden looked awesome in practice last year. And then, well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like right now we have no clue. Where it's almost like you have to go based off of like experience and like proven production elsewhere. But, like, until the spring comes, we really won't know. But I do think that the receivers from practice that we've watched, like, you do have to feel good about a whole handful of them. It's just you don't know who's going to who's going to really, like, step it up? Because there's always those guys that once the lights come on, they step it
They're
up.
They're gamers, yeah.
And then, but you never know the ones that they fizzle out. So, it'll be interesting. I think that they do have a nice little bunch right now. It's mm-hmm. just a lot of them look the same, which is surely by design. Like, they want that type. But then you also, they want the big body.
They don't have a big
guy. Yeah, they want the big body guy. And it's like the only one, the only receiver that I watch at practice, I'm like, that's a big body, like, is a unk. It's Monte Harrison. But I'm
like, he looks so big compared to them. And I think he is, but, you know, it's a lifetime of professional sports fitness and training.
Oh, yeah.
But it is, he is, like, just built more than them. He's taller than a lot of them, except for Shamar Easter, who's really tall, but he's probably not going to get a ton of opportunity from what it sounds like. And, yeah, Monte Harrison looks so different from the entire rest of the
receiver corps. There was a moment yesterday where, like, him and Cam Shanks were, like, having a conversation by each other, and I was like,
oh my gosh.
Y'all are in the same position room.
Yeah.
How?
It's so like, funny.
But yeah, it's something like your big body guy right now is Unk, and I'm like, the fact that that's, I'm just curious, what does this look like? I mean, right. Maybe Omega Blake, he's not like small, but
no,
he's
taller, yeah.
There's just nobody I look out like last year, Armstrong, I looked at him, I was like, that guy can go up and get a ball.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, I'm like, you're going to have to put it on the money if you're going deep.
Yeah, they're going to need a lot from Talen. And
yeah.
I think that's going to be, so much is going to hinge on that and how much progress he makes.
For sure.
They've talked a lot about wanting to get Sharp and Shanks, the two slot guys, on the field at the same time. You know, Pittman has said they're trying to find some ways to do that because they feel really confident in both of their skill sets. But then it's, okay, how do you manage having your two smallest guys out mm-hmm. there? You know, it hurts your size a little bit. But that's something that they're kind of exploring. Rohan Jones, the tight end, we've talked about a little bit. He's a guy they want to throw the ball to more. He's got experience doing it. I think they kind of know what he can do because he's done it in games, but Pittman has said they want to get him the ball more in practice yeah. than they have.
He gives me the, like, Rohan Jones in practice, he gives me the sense of, like, it's almost like you have another receiver on the field a lot
For sure.
of times whenever he's on. That's the main thing is like, that helps out from, like, just a bigger pass catcher guy who's athletic mm-hmm. standpoint. It's just so many. They're all athletic. All these guys are very, very athletic. Like, CC has made some catches that I'm like, holy cow. Like, I said, who's going to go up and get it?
That guy
will go up and get it. He's just not as, there's just none that are physically as big as some that we're used to in the past. But these guys are all athletic. It's just a matter of who's going to kind of be those guys that can go make a play when there's not a play.
Yeah.
Could be one, yeah.
Yeah. We talked to Coach Pittman a little bit about some of the transfer portal needs as well, and he stayed consistent in what he feels like their list is when they get to portal time, which is mainly defensive depth. He said their numbers on offense are pretty full. They don't have a ton of room to add on offense. He said they could maybe want a receiver if they have the room and if they have the funds. But as far as defense, you know, depth, particularly at safety and at defensive tackle, defensive end sure too, but I think defensive tackle was a lot of what he talked about yesterday, and safety are where they feel like just numbers wise, they just don't have the depth. And so I think you'll see them kind of try to go get some depth pieces, you know, some guys that they could trust in a game, but I don't think you're going to see them spend huge on some of these guys. And he also mentioned the idea of, you know, another veteran linebacker, but that kind of depends on how much money is available to them. And, you know, they might get a guy who's experienced at a different level. You might not, I don't expect to get, you know, a Xavien Sory coming from another SEC program with experience, but you might see somebody like, more like what they got in, you know, Steven Dix or Larry Worth, who had played a lot, but had, you know, were looking to move up a bit. So we talked about the portal sort of idea there, and we'll start to see that heat up. It was interesting to hear, yeah, that they're already starting that evaluation process because some guys have announced they're going in the portal. We asked about specialists because I realized we hadn't really talked to him yet about specialists, and they have some change there with Scott Starzik is expected to be the new kicker, the freshman. And we've seen him a little bit when they kick in the stadium on Saturdays, but not a whole lot yet because they're usually kind of doing their own thing when we watch practice. But he said he feels good about him. I think, you know, last year some of the kickers struggled in the stadium, and we would see and hear about that, and I'll be curious kind of how that looks throughout the offseason, especially with a freshman. But he's a highly rated guy. I mean, he was the number one kicker in the class by Coles Kicking, wasn't he? So I think they feel good about that. Devin Bale's back. I know you're a big Devin Bale head after you wrote about him a couple times last year.
I somehow adopted him. Like, anything Devin Bale related, I wrote it last year.
The Devin
year.
Bale beat, yeah.
I was on the Devin Bale beat. I mean, I wrote, like, it wasn't just like, oh, dude was on the, got thrown on the midseason Ray Guyward. I wrote, like, I literally was like, I'm writing a Devin Bale story today.
It was the Tennessee game, too. You wrote about him being this great game.
If it wasn't for him, they don't win that game, and I will die on that hill. But anyway, yeah, no, and I think I mentioned it yesterday or 2 days ago, the last time I was on the podcast. He was kicking, like, away from the wind, like, wind aided the other day, and he was booming punts, like, 60-plus. I was like, I see you, Bale.
Devin Bale hive.
I know. Throw him in the Heisman talk.
Yeah, yeah. So him, and then they get their long snapper back in Ashton Noe, an experienced guy that helps. And then he talked a little bit about return specialist and how, you know, Cam Shanks, that's a large reason they brought him in. And I think when Shanks first committed, I at least was wondering, you know, an All-American return specialist, how much are they going to want to use him in the offense? How much can he help in the offense? Because he is quite small. He is very fast. What does that look like offensively? And it has turned out to be, it sounds like they actually feel very good about him as an offensive piece, as well as a weapon, a real weapon in the return game.
Yeah, for sure. That's the vibe I got yesterday. It was like, Cam Shanks, punt returner. Like, I mean, it's not that surprising. I mean, we kind of expect it, but it seems like that is for sure the route they're going to go. But yeah, he's been in the offense a lot more too. You know, Rodney Hill, they want him in kick return, I know, which it's like they're getting skill guys in those return spots, which I know, like, a lot of places, like, you'll see, like, defensive backs and stuff kind of be back there. It's like Petrino was always loved having some skill guys, though, back there returning stuff. I think that... which I know it's Scott Fountain who runs the special teams, but it's just like you seem like there are pieces usually on a Petrino offense that can get thrown right into like a special teams role.
And they had some great return specialists on those Petrino teams.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Adams was as good as they come. It's just like, we're at that point in the spring where we're not seeing guys hit with full pads and like seeing actual simulations. So you just kind of like guess and you're seeing like things that should translate, like this dude is extremely fast, like surely that helps in the punt return you're seeing, you know,
and he's experienced in it too.
He's experienced. You're just kind of having to estimate who's gonna be in what spots, but yeah, it sounds like they're, I don't know, it's like hard to gauge special teams at this point. I'll be curious, the spring showcase, spring game, whatever you call it, that's like whenever, talking about field goal kicking with Starzyk, that's whenever I'm like, that's the first time I'm like, okay, there's people in the stands, we're in the stadium.
And it was rough last year. That was kind of when, and we had seen it a little bit before in practice, that there was maybe some shakiness, and it was rough in the spring game last year.
Yep. So
that'll be a test for Starzyk, I think.
Yeah. But I say, there's not always things you can like truly glean from a spring game, but I think field goal kicking is one that you can, I mean, I know kickers can have just an off day, and I do think that if you have a really strong day, it says a lot.
Yeah.
So
one more thing I wanted to hit while we're here on football is we've heard, I feel like, a lot from Coach Pittman about Danny Saili.
Yep.
Especially as they've been kind of a little shallow on the defensive line, especially with Cam Ball out at tackle for the spring after having surgery. And he is really high on Danny Saili. He said, you know, yesterday he expects him to be a rotational piece. You know, maybe you're not going to see him start. Maybe he's not going to be out there with the ones all the time. But he's going to be somebody that helps them. And I think last year when he came in, I was iffy on him because he had come in. He had transferred, done spring practice at, was it BYU? That he done spring practice at BYU, then transferred again. And so he had a cup of coffee at BYU, gets back in the portal, and comes to Arkansas. And, you know, there was some concern about the size he came in at and if that was a size he could play at or what was going to be the thing there. And Pittman has been really impressed with the strides that he's made technique-wise, size-wise. He said he's earned a ton of respect from the team, and he's not a guy we've talked to yet, so we haven't gotten to see kind of the personality there, but it sounds like, you know, you asked about, you know, other leaders on the team besides the obvious guys we know about with Talen Green and Fernando Carmona, and he mentioned Danny Saili in the group of defensive guys that he talked about, and I think that's interesting and something to track. I think he'll be a rotational piece that we see more often, and Pittman brings him up a lot.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, whenever I show up to a practice, like, before, the most noticeable thing at all, like, before you even look at what's happening on the field, like, play-wise, like, a lot of white jerseys, that's the offense, not a ton of red. Like, there's just way more offensive numbers than there are defensive right now, which goes into what we said about needing to get in the portal and add some guys. So it's, because of kind of the way the roster is right now, there's guys on defense that I think that maybe last year would have, like, you just aren't noticing him as much, but now, just given the numbers, it's like I'm paying a lot more attention to, like, the defensive linemen and stuff and seeing who they have there. And the biggest thing with him, with Siley, is he is, like, there were practices whenever he came in like, in the fall camp last year. I was like, he's not making it through this practice right now. He's just not at his size. He's not in the conditioning
playing shape,
to get through this right now. Like, he was, and he's getting through it now, and his body is not, like, transformed like Ian Gerfards has, in my opinion, just, like, looking at him. But it's like, he has changed. Like, you can tell he's been in an SEC strength and conditioning program now for a little bit, and he is gaining that respect. I mean, I think that that's one of those things that maybe they just identified a guy that they knew this would be a project, and they felt like they had last year enough pieces to maybe, like, it's not going to be as pertinent to have him ready right then. And maybe this was all along, like, a project. But it is, like, he is a guy that you're seeing, like, out there very, very often right now in the spring. And, yeah, we'll see. It's right now, I mean, without Cam Ball for the spring, it's giving guys like him a shot to prove themselves. And I know Ian has, and it seems like Danny Siley has. But that is a spot that I'll be eager to see, like, what they do in the portal, just because it's, like, numbers-wise. Like, this goes almost everywhere on the defense. Numbers-wise, gonna need to add some guys, just because right now it's like they might not feel bad about who they have, the ones, like, they might actually really like it. It's just you probably need a lot more depth, so.
Right, and they've got David Oki back. He's a little limited right now, mm-hmm. after he was injured, but they don't know quite what they have in him yet, the Abilene Christian transfer, because he hasn't really gotten to play the way that some of these other guys have because of injury. So that's another kind of question mark where we aren't really sure what he adds depth wise
yeah, for sure. And it's just, we won't know till they start throwing on the pads, to be honest. Right now, you just get a sense of what the coaches are saying and what you're seeing in limited practice. But I do think that these are, you're seeing some guys step up in a way that we haven't seen in the past, and that's important.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to talk some other Razorback sports news. We've got some women's basketball updates after we talked the other day about it here on Wednesday, and then Kelsey Music was on the show yesterday. If you missed that, be sure to look for it in the podcast feed or on YouTube. A great interview with her and some insight into how she's kind of approached her first couple weeks on the job. And then we'll talk a little bit of maybe some softball and some gymnastics here before we wrap it up for the weekend.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We're going to get to a little bit of women's basketball news, because when Ethan and I were here on Wednesday, when I was guest hosting for Matt, we talked some of what they might be seeing in the transfer portal, and they've since gotten a really big commitment from Yvette Mayberry. So what does that add for them? You know, she's the daughter of Lee Mayberry, a big Razorback legend, but as far as her play, you know, coming from Kansas, what does she add for them?
Right off the bat, experience. I mean, that's something that you cannot put a price tag on. She's played in NCAA tournament games. They don't win against Michigan last year. She came from Kansas. They don't beat Michigan in the first round last year without her. She started, like, if not every game, close to every game for 2 years in a row there. And then, unfortunately, I think dealt with a knee injury that really set her back this year. She gives experience right off the bat. And then I think the thing that people will notice immediately about her whenever they watch games, she's going to be the best on-ball defender they've had in a while. She can really get up and guard. She's like a gritty player. I just think that that's going to be something that will stand out right away. I think that she's the type of addition that it's a real culture setter as far as like the type of player they're wearing. She's not like there's all these really big fish in the portal like right now that like can go in and they average 20 points a game or something. She averages like a modest 10 points and something else. But I mean, the thing is, she really plays hard and she really defends. And that speaks to me about the type of culture, I think, or foundation they're trying to set in year one, is they're going to get some pieces that can come in. And if nothing else, like, I mean, and she's talented too. Don't get me wrong. She's very talented, but they want players that are going to come in and just will really be gritty right away. And I think that stood out to me. She can play at the pace that Kelsey Music's going to want to play at. Like, no doubt she can do that. And she can really, she's the type that she makes teammates around her better. She's just a good, like, kind of facilitator of the team. I watched her do that at Kansas. I went to Allen Fieldhouse over two years ago. They played in the WNIT there, and they actually ended Arkansas' season. I remember thinking, I was like, she's kind of the – I hate using the word glue. I think it's overused. But she was like a piece on the team that I'm like, this doesn't all work the same without you. Like, you got to have you on the court right now, or else this is not – this is just looking a lot worse. She kind of dictated a little bit of the pace, dictated a little bit of the defense. Kind of was – I mean, they say this about point guards, like being like the quarterback. She kind of felt like a quarterback on the team to me, as far as just like everything went a lot smoother with her. She's a big addition for them. I think that they've definitely got to fill some more spots, but it's also kind of cool that this is the first, like, just the fact that they got Lee Mayberry's daughter as the very first signee under Music was kind of like a cool, like, that'll always be the first one. She's going to wear number 11 like her dad did. And I think that it does establish like a sense of like, hey, we do care about people who want to be here. Because I watched an interview with her and Matt Zimmerman, and Lee was on this interview too, and that was like the number one thing that stood out. Both of them were like, she wants to be here, we want her to be here, and this is really cool for us. And I think that's important. She played a 1 year at Fayetteville High School, because while Lee was in the area on staff coaching, and then went to Watson Chapel, which is in the Pine Bluff area. She played there for a year, I think, and then he became an assistant at Oral Roberts in the Tulsa area, and she played at Booker T. Washington High School for 2 years over there. So, but for her, it's kind of a full circle of coming back to Fayetteville, where she spent a lot of her years growing up, and she was teammates with Sasha Goforth, who is a GA on the women's team, which it sounds like that was a really big connecting piece. Like, number one, there was a lot, it's one of a whole handful of things that made her want to come and play at Arkansas, but just the fact that Sasha's on staff at Arkansas as a GA, I think really helped there. And so this was she just kept on saying full circle, like, for her getting to come back, and you can tell it means a lot to all of them. It's a cool deal.
Yeah, between her and Romani Thurman on the volleyball team, they've got a couple of Arkansas legacy women now, which is pretty exciting.
And those two know each other, I've heard. Like, I guess they went to FHS at the same time. Romani was a really big volleyball player at FHS before she went to Parkview, and I guess they know each other really well. What I've heard, because I also heard that. It might not have like helped with like getting her, but it was just like a cool thing of like, oh, look,
another
we're back together.
Sure.
It's two athletes who played at FHS whose fathers were just legends around the same time for Arkansas men's basketball, and now they're playing women's sports here. It's like it's a cool thing to see it happen right now. I do think that there's going to be an instant, like, for Yvette. She got asked about like there could be like a pressure there of like, oh, you're Lee Mayberry's daughter, you need to step in and be be like him or whatever. But I think it's going to be by and large like the opposite of just like she instantly has fans. Mm-hmm. Like, people are pulling for her, and it's like, because she's Lee Mayberry's daughter. And I think that Romani, it's kind of the same way. It's like people are going to pull for you a little harder just because they know that the history there, and they really like think it's cool that somebody who did so much for the program years ago that it's now a generational thing. That's what I think resonates with fans. And I think that it was a great, like I said, just first edition for Music. It's one of those that instantly gets people, number one, some name familiarity with the Mayberry last name, but also just like a understanding that like this is the type of player that she wants. And that's like it was a win-win on a PR standpoint for the program, and also just for like, she is a good player. Like, people will notice that too. Like, you don't start at Kansas on an NCAA tournament team like that and you're not good. She's very good.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember Anthony Christensen wrote a story on Romani Thurman last season for a Hogs Illustrated issue. She was on one of our covers, and something that was interesting to kind of hear from that family about was her making her own way in sports and not being just Thurman's daughter, you know, just the latest Thurman. And it sounds like the same kind of thing with Yvette, especially because she's in the same sport.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not just, oh, she's here because she's Lee Mayberry's daughter. She like you said, she is talented. And then but it does make people excited to see that connection, and that can be a good thing. And then she also can prove that she's gotten it on her own as well. So it's cool to see, and I'll be interested kind of how they use her, especially because it seems like Coach Music really prioritizes defense and also has talked a lot about this kind of high octane offense that she likes to run. And I think that's going to be a departure from what we've seen for the last few years. There's a lot of connections, like you said, and I think that's why getting her as a first commit is so big, because of all those connections. For a new coach to have someone who has connections to the state, that helps a lot when you're building your foundation. And something else that she's done is retained a lot of staff, and she retained Nick Bradford, a Fayetteville guy, an AAU guy, really plugged in. So, you know more about Bradford than I do, but what does that kind of do for them, retaining him and then the other pieces that they've kept on this staff from previous years?
Retaining Nick Bradford instantly gets you connections in the local AAU circuit that you probably don't have otherwise. And if you're Kelsey Musick stepping into this new role, it's kind of vital to have. There's a lot of up-and-coming talent in this area that give it, like, the 26, 27, 28 classes. Get ready. There's like some real, real good basketball players in this area in particular. Farmington, Fayetteville, and you even stretch up into Missouri. It's like Nick Bradford has those connections and he can help you out in that aspect. And I think it's knowing that there is that talent around and keeping a guy that can help connect you while you're having a change at the head coaching position. It's like it's an instant, just like you need that person who can help you out there, because it's hard to establish relationships and like set yourself apart. But if you have somebody who can introduce you and all that, it helps. And then he's also really good at I think he likes to work with the posts, like, and he can get on the court and help out with that development. It sounds like that's kind of, it's like a twofold thing there with he's going to have a lot of shouldering some recruiting stuff, but also they like how he develops players. He was always like a big before their games this year, like, get them in a circle and motivate them and get them ready to go. He's like kind of that player's coach, if that makes sense, where it's I look at him and I say recruiter, developer. Like, those are the two biggest boxes that I think that he checks. He can really develop players, I think, and that's both on and off the court from a perspective of, like, he's been a player, I mean, at a really high level at Kansas, and he understands, like, I mean, obviously it's very different being a men's basketball player and women's. It's just like two different worlds. But like at the same time, he understands like athletes. I think he's a father. I just think that he's a big players guy. I know players really like him. So yeah. I also think that they retaining Amber Shirey is they call it the Dobo, director of basketball operations. That's big because she's just her institutional knowledge of the program, and she's been around for so long, and she was a player here, is like just valuable. She's adored in the coaching community. I mean, if you watch LSU come to play Arkansas, every single time before the game starts, Kim Mulkey walks out of the tunnel, she walks to her bench, then she'll walk down and she's looking for Amber Shirey, and it's immediately hug and pat. It's like, how many director of basketball operations in the country is like the one that, and that's just one example, because I know that's the whole Mulkey.
I don't know, friend of Kim Mulkey.
Well, I think she's a friend of just like pretty much.
No,
all
I
she comes from
mean.
The Gary Blair tree, which also Kim
right,
Mulkey does.
Yes.
So there's probably a lot there. But it's like, how many people in that role? Like, I see it all the time with head coaches. It's like more often than not, Christy Curry at Alabama does it. They come and they're looking for Amber to talk to her. I think that she's just very well respected in the whole coaching world. It's like she has a role that's like really like it's like less, I guess, probably potential to have beef, because I mean her job is just to like, I mean, it's just operational stuff. Exactly. But like people love her, and I think that helps you out, that like you keep somebody on the staff that just by and large I've never heard anybody say a bad word about Amber Shirey. It's just like there's not a bad thing to say. Like, she's just, like, so nice and so, like, rooted in the university, and she knows the program's history. I think that it's important to have that type of person on your staff that can just help you out with understanding things that every program, there are things that you're just like, I'm going to need somebody to explain that one to me because it doesn't make any sense. That's any job, honestly, that you need somebody that's been around and understands. So that's who she is. She's just a great person, like, in general. Like, and I think that really helps. And then Lacey Goldwire retained her. I think that goes back to there's probably a lot of Oklahoma connection there, because Lacey played at East Central, which is a D2 there. Musick was a player at a D2 in Oklahoma, coach D2. I think there's probably a lot of overlap from back then, but Lacey's a good recruiter as well. I don't really know Lacey all that well, but well-respected. So I think that, I mean, that was like day one Musick was here. She's like, yeah, Lacey Goldwire, she said she's staying. So I'm like, okay, y'all got to have some sort of pre-existing relationship. But I think that right now they have a core of staff returning that you got to be probably excited about. They're going to have to fill a couple, one more assistant spot and then one more, I think, just player development role. And we'll see who she brings in for that. But it's like a good core of staff returning that I think really helps you out with relationship building, which that's so key.
Yeah. Ethan will have updates on their transfer additions, staff additions, kind of tracking that new team coming together on wholehogsports.com over the next few months and once we get toward the new basketball season as well. But before we go, I've got to mention gymnastics because I was on that last night and I know you had it on too. Ethan mm-hmm. and I will text sometimes during the gymnastics meets because he also will tune in. And they Arkansas advanced to a regional final. They had a really, really good meet, especially on vault and on bars, which are two events that have been up and down for them at times. They had two really, really high scores there, and that helped them when they had kind of a tough beam rotation, but they had a big enough lead to where even a stumble there, they were able to maintain a lead. They just needed to finish top two, and they did. So LSU, number one overall seed, finishes first. It doesn't really matter if you're first or second as long as you're top two. And then they'll compete on Saturday against Michigan State and Kentucky, who won the other quad. And the top two teams from that quad on Saturday will then advance to Fort Worth to NCAAs. So that was something that Arkansas did last year. They advanced out of regionals, and they're looking to do it again. But the big story last night was how the meet ended. It was heartbreaking for Arkansas as Frankie Price, one of their stars, who even if you don't follow gymnastics that closely, you've probably seen Frankie Price even if you don't know it because she's had the most exciting floor routine. She's closed out their floor, which at home is always the last event. She's closed out floor for them her whole career for 3 years, and she's the one that has the Snoop Dogg floor routine that you probably saw. It's gone viral a couple times on social media. She is a fan favorite. She is a program leader. She is a teammate favorite, and she gets injured on the final Arkansas's final event of the meet. She is her first pass on floor, and I couldn't tell if it was an injury that happened on a takeoff or when she landed, but she landed badly. She has had a history of knee injuries. She basically tore everything in her knee as a senior in high school, and she still wears a brace after her recovery from that a few years ago. And I, you know, couldn't tell, don't know right away if it's the same leg, don't know if it's a knee, don't know if it's something else. It is lower body, Coach Jordan Weber said. But it was a very sad way to end the meet, and it was, you know, coaches, teammates, everyone was very emotional because this is, you know, one of their favorite people on this team. And it also means a lot for their performance on Saturday. You know, she anchors vault and floor for them, and they're going to have to find somebody to sub in. And whoever, especially on floor, whoever they put in for her on floor, it's going to be their season debut in competition. Just because they've had some depth problems. They've had injuries early in the season with Lauren Williams and Leah Smith going out earlier in the year. And those were two really solid floor performers for them. So it changes a lot for them. It was a hard way to end the meet. I know a lot of people, there's been kind of an outpouring from the gymnastics fan community because people across college gymnastics, people that follow it around the country, know Frankie Price because she's been such a big name for Arkansas for years. And so, you know, I had talked to her last month for a Hogs Illustrated issue, and she's a really cool person. You know, she has a really fun personality, and how she, you know, the coaching staff loves her. Her teammates love her. And, you know, it seems like it's going to be a severe injury, whatever it is. And it didn't look good as she was carried off the floor by one of the assistant coaches. And so it was hard because they wanted to celebrate. And they did end up, one thing that was kind of cool to see was there were a couple of individual performers. So there was a girl from, I believe it was Kent State, who was performing as an individual on floor. And so she was the last person that was going to go on floor. So she actually was going to go after Price. Still did. There was a delay, you know, whatever. Arkansas, all of the girls on the team are very emotional, but they actually cheered on this athlete from Kent State throughout her floor routine. And it was cool and fun to see them. It was something you saw kind of throughout the meet as some of the individuals from other schools, the schools on that rotation would cheer for them like they were their teammates, which was, it's something fun about gymnastics, I think, that you, it's a very positive sport. And it was cool to see that from Arkansas. And then, you know, they did celebrate, you know, moving on to the regional final, and they talked about how they're going to try to do it for Frankie. And I think that's gonna be something that motivates them a lot on Saturday.
Yeah, I get the sense that she's just kind of like, she's been like the heartbeat of the team. Totally. I'd say, like, it's like, I mean, in the moment that it became reality of like she went down, because I mean, I'm like, I'm watching this out of the corner of my eye, and I'm like, oh goodness, what just happened? And I mean, and you could just read it across coaches, teammates, like it was devastating to all of them.
It was, the arena was silent.
It was so
just watching
silent
on the broadcast. It was like, I thought they had like cut the sound.
Yeah, no, it was pretty crazy. And you just felt horrible, I think, seeing that. And I think that having watched their team from like kind of a distance this year, like I tune in when I can. They've just been through a whole lot. Like,
there's
I mean,
lot of injury problems.
Between injuries and then like their whole like they couldn't get, they missed SECs, the one team to do it, and they couldn't get granted to go try and improve their score elsewhere. It's like they've been through a lot, and I know that. I mean, let's. I don't know what game we'll play, but if you've heard this one before, an Arkansas team has been through a whole lot with injuries and with like just things going their way, and it's like, will it make them stronger because of it, and how will they look the next time because of it? But I mean, that's really hard to shake off because it's like I said, she's like kind of the heartbeat of their team. So
yeah,
it's a toughie for them. I hated to see it, and it was just like. Yeah, seeing Jordan Weaver's reaction, it was like she instantly like was just like
she fought through that. She stayed on that interview on the TV on the ESPN Plus broadcast, and she did the on camera interview, and she was emotional, which understandably. Yeah. And she, I was like, I admired her for even doing the interview because because the injury had just happened, like the meet had just ended,
very fresh.
And so yeah, she fought through that interview and talked about how they wanted to do it to show their love for Frankie on Saturday. So they definitely still have a really good chance to advance. You know, LSU is probably going to place first, so it's kind of a battle for second between Arkansas, Michigan State, and Kentucky. Anybody can have an off meet. You know, LSU had an off meet against Arkansas, and Arkansas beat them in the regular season in a duel. So you never know, but LSU, I mean, you can presume that they are going to advance. So it's kind of a battle for that second spot, and Arkansas still has a really good shot.
Midway through their meet yesterday, I was thinking that they might have they were just doing so well.
They
I was
could
like,
have, if they hadn't had a rough beam rotation, they could have actually scored higher than LSU.
Yeah.
Which getting first or second in that doesn't give you anything, but it would have given you some confidence.
I was gonna say, it would have been
points.
Like, well, that was cool.
Yes, it would have been very cool to say you finished ahead of LSU twice, the number one team in the country, the defending national champion. That would be
like,
huge.
They had a really good, it's like, it's all going to be overshadowed by what happened at the very end, but like, they had a great meet.
They really did. And so. I think they needed that, especially after the time off that they had. But I believe they're at 3 o'clock on Saturday. I'll be covering that on wholehogsports.com. That'll be on ESPN Plus again. Just a lot going on still. Even with basketball over, there's still so much happening, and it's been fun to cover this spring. But we hope you'll follow along with everything that we're covering on wholehogsports.com. Matt will be back in this chair to host on Monday, and we will see you next week.